Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Drew Sherman, let me tell you a little bit about him. He is a capital partner in the Washington, D.C. firm of Caton, Merchant & Zavis, a Chicago-based commercial law firm with over 400 attorneys nationwide. He is a recognized international authority on the legal and strategic issues affecting small and growing companies and serves as chairman of his firm's Franchising, Licensing, and Distribution Group. He's the author of 8 books on the legal and strategic aspects of business growth and franchising, and he is the author of the book I'm holding in my hand, which is Franchising and Licensing, 2 Ways to Build Your Business. It's in its second edition. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Jim, it's great to be back.
It's good to be back with you, and thank you for joining us. I've gotten more and more into your book, and I'll tell you, this book, I can see why it's in the second edition, because this is a tremendous book. And the thing that I like about your book, Andrew, and I like books like this, because it's a technical book, but you've written it in a way that the average person who might be interested in franchising can understand it.
Well, Jim, I've never tried to write books for other lawyers. I've always tried to take what is otherwise a difficult legal concept and break it down for the everyday small business owner.
Well, you've successfully done that in the one that I have in my hand. I'm sure your others are the same. But, folks, when you see this book, when you order it, don't be intimidated by the size. I mean, this thing is massive. What's it, about 500 pages?
Yeah, it's getting close to that.
It's almost over 400 pages. It's a very big thick book, but the stuff that's inside, there's a lot of good stuff in here. And if you are thinking about franchising, if you're thinking about being a franchisee or a franchisor, you need to have a copy of this book. One of the things, Andrew, I want to talk about is something you call the key components of the relationship in a franchise. And I'll tell you what, before we get specifically into that, why don't you take just a minute or so and define for us what a franchise is?
Well, franchising, which is what we'll focus on this morning, is really a type of licensing. There's many different ways to license your intellectual property or your proprietary assets to others. And in franchising, you take your trademarks and your systems and all of the things that are unique to your business, and you kind of package them together into a business format franchise, and you license that to the franchisee, who agrees to use your trademarks and your operating systems to deliver that product or service to the customer.
Mm-hmm. All right, good. Thank you. One of the things that you've got in your book, actually in Chapter 1, are what you call the secure foundation, key components to a secure foundation for having a good franchise, and there's about 17 or 18 of them, I think. And what I want to do is go through that list of items that create this good foundation for a successful franchise, and let's talk about both sides of the issue. Let's talk about the way you need to look at these components as the person who's trying to license his or her idea and be the franchisor to distribute the franchise, and from the standpoint of the person who is acquiring the franchise, who is called the franchisee.
That's correct.
The first one is a proven prototype.
Well, again, just to dial back for a half a second,
okay.
this list in Chapter 1 of the book, you wouldn't build a house from a insecure or unsecure foundation, and the thought is the same with franchising, is that if you're going to be, from a business and strategic and even from a moral perspective, if you're going to be licensing a business to someone else, you want to be sure that there's a good foundation from which you're licensing. And that kind of leads us into that first component of the foundation, which is that proven prototype. I think it would be both a financial error as well as a moral error to franchise a business to somebody that you have not tried yourself, that you have not worked out many of the kinks of the business, and it's the franchisor's legal obligation otherwise to make sure that they've got something that works in a format that works for the prospective franchisee.
You know, about almost a year ago, I started interviewing the top small business people in the country. These were the state winners of the SBA Small Business Person of the Year.
Sure.
Including the top three in the nation. And we'll be doing that again coming up in the next month or so. We'll be getting started on that. We wound up interviewing probably 20 or 25 of those people and have those winners. And one of them still stands out in my mind. She was from Arkansas. I've forgotten her last name, but her first name was Margaret. And she had developed candy flowers. And she had come up with a way to make these candy flower arrangements, these candy bouquets, and she started it out in her little town in Arkansas, and then over a period of a few years, she franchised them, and now they're all over the world.
It's true, and again, the there's hundreds and hundreds of those kinds of examples. I think it's important for our listeners to note that, you know, you don't have to be a Fortune 500 company to launch a successful franchise system. There are many, many counts of smaller companies in places that aren't necessarily New York City or L.A. that have grown because they have a good format and a good prototype, and they have a product or service that people want or need.
Well, and the thing that was interesting about her and is that many times I have met people who had an idea, and their goal, their initial goal, was to franchise. And in her case, that wasn't the situation. I mean, she started out just trying to have a small business, and the desire, the need for, and the demand for what she offered was so great that that was the only way she could figure out how to meet that was to franchise.
Well, you know, one of the reasons I laid out this foundation in the book is there are sometimes entrepreneurs who have the wrong ideas as to what they need to franchise. Or worse yet, there are consultants who are running around who don't understand franchising, who try and talk companies into becoming franchisors mm-hmm. prematurely.
Right. Yeah. And that is a mistake, as you say, when they do that. Let's move on down and talk about a strong management team. We've got just a few seconds here before we take a break.
Sure. The management
team. I tell you what, Andrew, that music came up quicker than I thought.
No problem.
Let's take a break, folks. We're going to be right back. We're going to continue to talk about the key components of a secure foundation that you need to have a good franchise, whether you're buying one or whether you're starting one. 20 after, 888-822-8255. That's our phone number. I'll be right back with Andrew Sherman, the author of Franchising and Licensing. We are back. It's 24 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Our phone number is 888-822-8255. If you'd like to call and talk to Andrew Sherman, who is an expert in franchising, ladies and gentlemen, and franchising, I mean, not only franchising, but also licensing of your intellectual property, which could be, which you could very well license your intellectual property and not have anything to do with the franchise, right, Andrew?
Absolutely. Another important point for the listeners is that there are many different types of licensing. Franchising is one of them, but merchandise licensing, technology licensing, brand extension licensing, these are all types of ways to license your intellectual property without triggering the franchise laws.
I want you to come back another day and talk about that, because when we've gone through a little more on franchising, because I get a lot of those kinds of comments, inquiries over the email from people, and not just email, people who come into my office, into my business consulting office, and they've made an invention, they've invented something, or they've developed some device or some process or something like that. And what they want to do, their first thought is to manufacture that, to produce it, to distribute it, to market it, the whole thing. And these are people who they're really smart, and they've come up with a great idea, but they have no idea how to take it to the market.
I think, A, I'd love to come back, and B, you know, as one of the leading small business consultants, Jim, I think it's important for you to, you know, counsel these folks that rather than, go to a fully vertically integrated business format, which is almost impossible to fund and to get going, they can license that technology to somebody that already has those resources in place, and then they're in the business of picking up royalty checks from their mailbox.
That's right. That's exactly what I tell them. I tell them, are you a manufacturer? No. Are you a marketer? No. Do you have national distribution? No. What do you have? You have this idea. Let's put that in the hands of somebody who can do all those things.
And a lot of these big companies, they're looking for license opportunities.
That's exactly right.
Some small business owners and entrepreneurs are afraid that, you know, they'll go tell the idea and the big company will steal it. Well, you know what? One thing I like to tell my client is, you know, if you don't tell, you can't sell.
That's right.
And they've got to get comfortable with that.
Let's move on down our list and talk about the next item in the key components of a secure foundation to have a successful franchise is a strong management team.
Yeah, the important point here for the listeners, and this is very common in the early stages of a franchise company, is that, you know, you may have a chain of, say, brake and muffler repair shops that's going real well, and people have asked to open up franchise units in another neighborhood, another territory, but your management team is primarily focused on brake and muffler repair, and they know the underlying industry. What they don't know is how to be a franchisor. There's a big paradigm shift, I think we talked about last time we were together, between being in the underlying business and being in the business of teaching others to be in that business.
Right.
And one of the flaws you see in some franchisors' management teams are either being front-loaded on the industry expertise but knowing nothing about franchising, or sometimes the opposite, which is, you know, franchising has become such an integral part of our economy that some franchisors load up on, you know, franchise executives from other companies, but
marketing,
they don't know
experts.
Anything about the industry.
Yeah, you know, and you know, it's interesting, Andy, because I see that in all small businesses that have attained any size at all. Most small businesses that when they acquire an executive, a stable of executives, some vice presidents, those vice presidents are typically industry-specific vice presidents. They don't really know that much about the general things that a company that's growing like these companies are need to know, like human resources or marketing or advertising, that sort of thing. They're industry-specific executives, and I see that a lot. And as you say, when the companies grow into, they decide to take their company into a larger area through franchising, their executives are not the ones that they have at that moment when they decide that, perhaps, are not really prepared to franchise. They're prepared to operate, to do what they know how to do, but not to franchise.
That's right. And there's, you know, some of us are very good at doing what we do, especially the small business owners of this nation, but they may not be as good at teaching others to do what they do.
Right.
And it's the people that can do the latter that make the better franchisors.
Sufficient capitalization. That's the next one.
Well, this is a really important issue. Many people who watch shows on franchising or listen to radio programs like this, they're misled into thinking that that they don't need capital to launch their franchise business, that that's all the franchisee's problem. And part of the adequate foundation is to make sure that the franchisor has the capital in place to deliver the support and training that they need to the franchisees.
And have the staying powers.
Exactly.
Stand by. We've got to take a quick break. Folks, it's 29 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Andrew Sherman is our special guest. Stay with us. All right, we're back. It's 33 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. And our phone number is 888-822-8255. We're talking about franchising, some of the key components that make a good foundation for a good franchise relationship between the franchisor and the franchisee. And Andrew Sherman is our special guest, and he is the author of the outstanding book called Franchising and Licensing, Two Ways to Build Your Business. Andrew, tell us how to get your book.
Well, it's available on Amazon.com. I checked it over the weekend, and it's there and ships in 24 hours. Also available through the publisher's website, the American Management Association, which is amanet.org, and it should be in most of the bookstores.
All right. Congratulations. It's an outstanding book, and folks, I recommend you check it out. Andrew, you know, to go back just for a second, the first component that we talked about, a proven prototype. When you're a franchisee, you're the person buying the franchise. You're taking it to your local market. What do you want to see when you say proven prototype? What is that? What's the measurement of a proven prototype?
Well, again, we talked about this concept of having all the kinks worked out. If you're a franchisee and you walk into a business and it does not seem to have its act together, the product or service is not delivered properly, the employees do not appear to be properly trained, they're not efficient in the way they're delivering that product or service to you, if you walk out having a bad customer experience, then if you're the prospective franchisee, the broader question of what can they do for me that I can't do for myself, you got to start wondering, what is that thing? Because they don't seem to have their act together, so what business do they have selling a franchise to me? And that's the main thing that you're looking for. All of us have been to businesses. I think as small business owners, we've been to businesses and we've said, wow, that was a fantastic customer experience. Man, if I could buy a franchise, I would. And that's the kind of, blown away customer experience and observations that you want to have. There's thousands and thousands of small businesses around the country that people think are franchises because they have their act together, when mm-hmm. in fact they're just mom and pop owned businesses.
One of the things that you rely on when you own a franchise, when you are a franchisee, is someone coming to your marketplace and seeing your business and saying, oh yeah, the last time I was in one of those stores, I got a good product or service, I'm going to go there now.
Exactly.
Because as you know, when you go to Moscow or Massachusetts to McDonald's, you get the same hamburger every time.
Well,
and that's what the customers are relying on. And as you said, if you go to a franchise establishment and you've gotten bad service or bad products or whatever, bad quality, well, someone might say, well, that's that management of that operation, but that directly reflects on the ability of the franchisor, doesn't it?
Precisely. And the key word for our listeners, and I mean if there's only one or two things they take away from this Monday morning, would be consistency. Because consistency comes from systems. I mean, if you think about how fascinating it is that McDonald's is able to produce, millions and millions of Big Macs a day, 10 and 8,000 miles apart from each other, and they all taste the same, they may not sound like one of those groundbreaking revelations, but you try and do that in your own business. Try and replicate
Yep.
that consistency over and over and over again with each customer transaction. And that's when you realize the true power of franchising is that these companies have built systems to deliver that consistency.
Well,
that's
the other
pretty
thing,
amazing.
It is. There's no question about it. And another thing, I want to go back just for a second on the strong management team point that you made, one of the other components, and that is that if the team that you make contact with while you are looking into their franchise, if they're not extremely responsive and helpful, et cetera, if you think that it's not adequate, the way they treat you and the way they respond to you is not adequate, that's before they've got your business. How are they going to treat you after they've got your business?
Exactly. There's two key points for our listeners here who may be wearing the hat of a prospective franchisee when looking at the management team. Number one, most of us wouldn't go to a university that has a reputation for bad professors.
Right.
I mean, you just wouldn't. You want the people who are teaching you how to do this to be committed to your success. And second is an integrity issue. I mean, do these folks, when you meet them, seem to be committed to supporting you and helping you and training you, or do they just seem anxious to get your franchise fee and move on to the next one?
Mm-hmm.
And if you see that latter kind of pattern, you see a culture of people that, I hate to make a generalization like this, but the old gold chain and leisure suit, blue suede shoe kind of image, you're in the wrong place. You don't want to be buying a franchise from a used car salesman.
Now, let's move on down and get back into sufficient capitalization. This is a big deal because I have known people who bought franchises from an organization that did not have sufficient capitalization. And every franchise is like every business. They go through peaks and valleys. And when you're in the valleys, all businesses have to have the working capital to get them out of the valleys to take them back up to the peak. And if your franchisor doesn't have sufficient capital to get them and you through all this, then as they go, so go you.
Exactly. And it's a real problem for some franchisees because you take an example of a recently bankrupt franchise system. There's a chain of bagel stores that went bankrupt recently, and their franchisees, who may be perfectly good small business owners, are being affected in terms of customers and vendors and suppliers, and they didn't do anything wrong.
Right.
Except that franchisor was getting too fancy with their finances.
Might have spent too much money on the wrong things. Well, I want to talk a little bit more about the capitalization when we come back. Folks, it's 39 after. Our phone number is 888-822-8255. I'm Jim Blessingame, the Small Business Advocate. We are back. It's 44 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Andrew Sherman is our guest, and he has been with us before, and we're talking about franchising and licensing, which is the title of his book, which is in its second edition, Two Ways to Build Your Business. Andrew, tell us again how we can get your book.
Book's available on Amazon.com as well as in most of the major bookstores, and I believe the publisher has it available as well, the American Management Association, which is amanet.org.
Okay. Thanks, Andrew.
You know, Jim, before you get to the next question, I've been listening to that tagline about the bravest of any non-military American. I thought we'd take a second to recognize the three POWs that came home this weekend.
Thank you for that, Andrew. I agree with you, and go ahead. Do you have any more?
Just that it was great to see them come home last night, and we've been talking about franchising, so the tie-in here is apparently the first two things that they wanted to eat coming out of captivity was pizza and hamburgers. That's a testament to Americans' franchise system.
No question about it. No question. No, I agree with you. My audience knows that over the last few weeks that I've reminded everyone to keep them and their families in their prayers, and I'm glad to see them home. But you know, I was a soldier. My son is a soldier. And when you put the uniform on, you accept the consequences. And they put the uniform on. They were near harm's way. Turns out they were a little nearer than maybe they thought they were going to be. And they had a problem over there. So, and I got to take my hat off to Jesse Jackson. I'm not sure about how all that's going to work out. But you gotta admire somebody who knew that he might be in danger. And went in over there anyway and did what it took to get him out.
I continued to be, you know, on and off again of a Jesse Jackson fan, but the guy, you know, he does what he says he's going to do, and I think any small business owner has got to admire somebody who's got integrity and commitment and who goes over and gets the job done. So,
well, I'll tell you something else that's good about this. Of course, obviously, the family are ecstatic about this, and they should be. I promise you, if my son were in that situation, I would be a very happy person right now, regardless of everything else. But the other thing is, those guys are going to bring back some good information that I'm sure that our military will be able to use. But thank you for bringing that up, Andrew. I agree with you 100%. Let's talk just a little bit more about capitalization and the importance of it. Is there a benchmark for being able to tell if a franchisor is properly capitalized?
Well, a couple of things. I mean, one thing to keep in mind, and we haven't really gotten into this yet this morning, and looking at the hour, we may need to save it for a future show, but franchising is a regulated way of doing business. And the disclosure documents that the franchisor must provide to the franchisee include the franchisor's financial statements, and they need to be audited. So the franchisee should really sit down with their accountants and take a look at those financial statements and try and get a sense of just how secure the franchisor is. While there's probably no one benchmark, you know, most of us, hopefully, if we've been in business for ourselves, know how to read a financial statement or have an accountant that does and can get a sense as to the how stable the franchisor is. And if you see some things that don't look right, ask the questions. I mean, if we, again, leave our prospective franchisee listeners with only one thing this morning, it would be asking those questions and reading these disclosure documents and doing your homework on the franchisor.
No question. And back to your audited financial statement, is there any legal requirement? You said it should be audited. Is there any legal requirement that it be audited?
Yes, there is. Under the what we call the registration states, these are the states that require the franchisor to prepare that Uniform Franchise Offering Circular, or UFOC, and register it with that state prior to an offer or sale. They require those financials to be audited. And then eventually the federal government requires that as well.
And folks, I'll tell you what else, being an old syndicator, an old real estate syndicator, and having seen a lot of private placement memorandums myself, don't just accept the fact that it is an audited statement. Do a little bit of research on the firm, the accounting firm that did the audit. You know, what do you think, Andrew? It wouldn't hurt to do just a little bit of research on the quality of that firm.
Absolutely. I mean, I've seen it where, you know, the big five or big six or however many we have right now do the audits, but I've also seen it where it's a one-man shop in a place I've never even heard of, and with all due respect to our listeners that may be small business accounting office owners, there are a few guys out there who do not follow auditing standards as closely as we'd all like them to, and those are things.
But I'll tell you what, I have seen a lot of deals fail with Big Eight audits on them, tax charges with them too.
Especially when it's a 22-year-old kid doing the audit.
Yeah, absolutely. The thing about the audited statement, though, is you know, Andrew, one of the things that I've learned is a lot of small business owners and especially a lot of small business dreamers don't know how to read a financial statement. They don't know how to look at a financial statement and tell whether this company has got enough, is capitalized properly or not. And that's where you need to have someone who knows what they're doing to look at that and tell you. Don't ask them to tell you whether they think this is a good pizza or a good a vacuum franchise or whatever it might be. Don't ask them that. Ask them if this franchisor gets into trouble, will they be there or will they go under while my business is doing okay?
Well, two good points there. Number one, sounds like good topics for future shows.
Yeah.
And number two, if you really read these financials carefully, you can find some other things about the franchisor's business beyond just how healthy they are. You can really get some insights into their industry.
Well said, Andrew. Got to take a quick break, folks. It's 50 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We are back. 54 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and our special guest is Andrew Sherman. He's the author of Franchising and Licensing, Two Ways to Build Your Business. The books are available online and any of the bookstores?
It should be in almost all the major bookstores. I certainly have seen it in Barnes & Noble and Borders and those chains, and online at Amazon.com.
Good. Thank you, Andrew. And by the way, folks, Andrew's practices nationwide. If you would like to work with him, he's not just involved in franchising and licensing. He helps companies grow their businesses and small companies grow to mid-size and mid-size companies grow to large companies. And Andrew, if someone wanted to contact you to get you to help them, I'm sure you'd probably have a conversation with them initially just to sort of interview them. It wouldn't cost them anything?
Absolutely. We do all kinds of initial consultations just to see if we can add value to the relationship. And unfortunately for my wife and kids, I'm on the road a fair bit, and very few of our clients are local. So if any of the listeners have something that's growth-oriented or they've got a business they're thinking about franchising, give me a call at 202-625-3500 or contact me online at asherman@kmz.com.
All right. Or, if you just want to let me know, I'll be sure that you get the information you need. I'll email it or phone it back to you and make sure that you're able to get in touch with Andrew. And as you can tell, he's got an easy manner and a great perspective on these issues, and I'm sure you'd enjoy working with him. Andrew, I'm going to go off the book for just a minute, and as we wrap up the hour, there's a quick thing, I'm springing this on you. You didn't know I was going to do this. I've just gotten an email recently from three ladies who have developed a kind of an herbal pack that they're using. That's you apply it to your body, some kind of herbal therapy. I'm not sure exactly what the deal is. I don't have the email in front of me. But one of the things I thought was interesting, they emailed me and they said, "Do we need to get a patent for this?" And I just thought I'd throw that question out to you.
Wow, you really did throw me a curveball there. So let me try and react. We've been mentioning from time to time on the last show and this one this concept of intellectual property.
Mm-hmm.
And there's four components of intellectual property, and maybe this is another show in itself, but patents, trademarks, copyrights, and trade secrets. And it sounds like these three entrepreneurs have two choices. They can either hold on to the intellectual property and license it as a trade secret, or they can try and get a patent. If they go the patent route, they have to meet the criteria of the patent office. It's got to be novel and useful and other things,
mm-hmm.
that not known to those in the art that they may fall short of. The other problem with patent protection is that it tends to cost-benefit analysis-wise not necessarily provide all the benefits to small business owners that they'd like to have.
Well, it certainly ends any hope of having it be a secret ends when you get a patent, doesn't it?
That's right. It becomes a matter of public record at that point. And while the government does grant you a 17-year monopoly to exclude others from using that, there have been a lot of small business owners that have spent way too much money protecting patents only to find that the patent didn't afford them the protection that they thought.
Well, my advice to them was to take a lesson from Coca-Cola and keep it as a trade secret.
Can't argue with that advice.
Yeah. Andrew, we're coming up on the end of the hour. Thank you very much for joining us, as you did in the last time, and as I'm sure you'll do in the future. You did a great job, and I really recommend your book to my audience. It's called Franchising and Licensing. Had patents on my mind. Thank you again, Andrew, and we'll have you back again real soon.
My pleasure, Jim. I really believe in what you're doing, and I wish the best of luck to all your listeners this morning.
Thank you, sir. See you later. Andrew Sherman, folks, the author of Franchising and Licensing. Check his book out online. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest country in the world. And remember, be guilty today of committing a random act of kindness. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. Let me tell you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.